If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Micro Brew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. They did it! They did it! They beat the Chicago Cubs in five games, a wild time. The last week has been a wild time. The National League Division Series, it goes the distance. It ends in a 3-1 triumph on Saturday night at American Family Field in Milwaukee. The Brewers have defeated Craig Counsell. They've beaten the Cubs. They're off to the NLCS. Fourth time that they'll be in a league championship series. Only one of the other times went well, and the last two seven-game series did not go well. So we will see if this is different. The Los Angeles Dodgers are coming to Milwaukee. It's all starting Monday night. You can't marinate in it. It's coming at you fast and furious. The Brewers are going to pivot right into the NLCS. It's going to be another crazy week of baseball. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. You know me. You know the other guy, Kurt Hoag. He's the Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Kurt, it has been a week. I'll apologize. I thought we were going to have multiple podcasts during the NLDS. Certainly that series warranted such a thing, but the schedule was crazy. We had a lot of late nights. We had one of our bathrooms just exploded into the other bathroom. I'm not even like entirely sure what's going on in your house right now, but it sounds real bad. And we just could not pull that off until just now. And oh my goodness, do we have some things to talk about, Kurt Hoag? We have things to talk about. What are we going to start with?
Well, I can't like just leave the cliffhanger on the bathrooms. You're going to bring it up.
It's a disaster.
You know, one thing that I don't recommend experiencing in life is coming home from game two of a playoff series.
Coming home like during the game, actually. Like you left pregame to go deal with this.
I did, but then coming home after the game, that part wasn't fun either. Don't get me wrong. That's what led to the second part. But coming home after the game and your entire ceiling and the stuff that is above the ceiling and between the wood flooring on the next level is all over your bathroom, scattered and wet, and sheetrock everywhere. I would not recommend that. Nope. Don't think that's a good thing, especially when you are supposed to go to Chicago the next day, like in 7 hours. Do not recommend.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, Kurt. I'm so sorry this happened to you. Like, okay, so if you've read between the lines, you kind of get it. He leaves game two pregame to deal with a bathroom that a pipe that is leaking everywhere, spraying everywhere from the sounds of it. He's
spewing, he deals with that. Perhaps. Spewing is a good verb to use here. Yeah.
Yes. Spewing. Hashtag magic spew. In the middle of in the middle of magic brew. So that's happening. And then you come back to the game. You make it for the first pitch. You cover a Major League Baseball game two. Great game. 7-3 after your rebase struck out the side. And then you go home and discover, oh, guess what? It was worse than you thought. The roof has collapsed. Your house is falling apart.
It literally the ceiling of the bathroom, the other bathroom that leaked is right above it. It literally caved a minute before I walked in. Like right before. It was fresh.
It's funny, not really. It's funny because it's been a long week. Because you just have to laugh. I am so sorry that happened to you. Insurance is involved. It's a whole thing. And like you said, you then had to go to Chicago for a few days, and then you'll be going to Los Angeles later this week. This is probably the worst possible time, I would say, for a roof to collapse in someone's house. That's just my thought on that. I have no good way to pivot to the actual baseball.
You did. There's a roof. A roof. And there was noise that could have burst the roof. Roof raising. I don't know.
Were you booing your bathroom for falling apart? Game five was on Saturday night. It was incredible. Tense game throughout. The Brewers, of course, won exactly how we thought they would, and that's by hitting nothing but solo home runs and getting four innings of glorious relief from Jacob Mizrowski and two innings of glorious relief from Chad Patrick. This is exactly what we saw sometime in July, I would say, August. We said this. I'm sure we said it on a podcast. This is how they're going to win in the postseason, by hitting home runs and getting great relief from these two rookie pitchers, both of whom were very much clicking in the middle of August. One of them was not on the roster. The other looked like a disaster. I do think actually Jacob Mizrowski is kind of the player of the series. I think he's the guy that you follow. I mean, you could obviously talk about what William Contreras did, hitting two home runs. Andrew Vaughn's two home runs could not have loomed larger. In fact, I think, I don't know if WPA necessarily reflects this, but I have to feel like the Andrew Vaughn home runs shifted the outcomes more than anybody else could.
Only if someone had looked this up this morning and posted on multiple social media platforms.
You did. Tell me, what did it say? Who's the WPA hero of the series?
Chad Patrick.
He is fantastic.
His game five performance really swung it. It was late-ish, but it wasn't like that happens in the ninth inning. It's a huge swing, but that one outing was worth 5.6% percentage points of championship win probability added. So him doing what he did made the Brewers 6% more likely to win a World Series. There's probably not many single contributions in franchise history that swung a championship WPA that much. Maybe Nigel Morgan's single. Maybe.
Yeah, I wonder. Cecil Cooper's single.
Cecil Cooper's hit has got to be. I mean, that has to be one. There can't even be another one that's close. I wouldn't think.
Yeah, the pitching was just unreal. It was just unreal in this game. I mean, Mizrowski has never, not even in relief, had an appearance where he didn't walk at least one batter until game five, when he worked four innings. He allows a home run right to Saya Suzuki. And I mean, you know, you think back to other outings where something has gone wrong right away and it shakes him. He just isn't like he just loses it. For lack of a better way of putting it, against the Cubs earlier this year, he had an outing where he had a really bad first inning. There was some like goofy stuff that happened, some misplay. And then he did rally. And I know that the Brewers were, you know, other teammates of his, had Christian Yelich among them, had said how impressed they were with that was Jacob Mizrowski really settling in. I mean, I don't think it's a secret. Like you've seen him work all year. He's different, you know, like he's very expressive and he can lose it. Like he gets distracted is the wrong word, but he just, like, you know, he's still learning how to be a big league pitcher mentally. And he turned a corner, or it sure looks like he turned a corner in this postseason series. And then Chad Patrick with those, I mean, Aaron Ashby actually probably gets arguably the biggest out of the game, even though he puts two guys on. He then strikes out Kyle Tucker after falling behind 3-1 in the count. Major, major disaster coming for the Brewers, and he gets possibly the Cubs' most dangerous hitter. Second half stats, maybe notwithstanding. And then Chad Patrick comes in and gets those two outs and then another inning. It's got me thinking a little bit, Kurt. Do you think this is maybe half baked? Did the Brewers know that they were going to end up relying on so little starting pitching in the postseason that they just started looking at options like this? That over the course of the last couple months, you saw Tobias Myers become almost exclusively a bullpen guy. They started messing around with Chad Patrick. Jacob Mizrowski, obviously, they wanted to try the starter thing. It just, you know, just did not work out, so they went in another direction with him. It feels like maybe they saw this coming and were like, we're not going to just throw a traditional starter in the postseason anyway. Four of these five games in this series could be called a bullpen game, not necessarily because that's how they wanted it, but that's what they were, and they won three of them. So, well, they won two of the four bullpen games, but still, like, they got it done. Do you think this was the plan all along? Is there some, like, methodology to this, to just, like, going, because it kind of informs how they're going to make the next roster, too. They just maybe thought this was how they were going to play in October.
Yes and no. I think the Woodruff injury and other series of events over the final month made it so. But I think there was like little traces of it. They started wanting Chad Patrick to be in this role. Tobias Myers got kind of a test run and seemed like he would be in the role before Chad Patrick really kind of figured it out there. with his relief mix. But if Brandon Woodruff is healthy, their pitching plans look entirely different. Like, they probably win that. The series doesn't go to five games, I don't think, if Brandon Woodruff is starting. One way or the other, I'm not exactly sure, you know, how they would have planned it out. Maybe he starts game two and you go bullpen game three, or, you know, he starts game three and you go bullpen, whatever. He probably pitches pretty well and you win another game early. But because of that injury and, frankly, a pretty forward-thinking front office, which is, you know, not just going to fall back into the, like, the Jose Quintana's done it before, you got to throw him out there line of thinking. If this was 2010, Jose Quintana starts game two for the Brewers, and who knows how that goes. Probably not great. The Cubs didn't score on him in three innings in game three, I think he pitched, but he got, like, they were all over him. They just didn't find the holes and didn't hit it out of the park. So, I think it's a mixture of things. And as you look forward to this Dodgers series, which we'll preview a little more, that's once again the question. But I'm also not entirely concerned about whether or not, like, they have the arms to get through it. I think they have the arms to get through it. It's a matter of, you have to pitch Priester and you have to pitch Quintana in some capacity, probably not even like super long length capacity, but you just need them to get you bulk in some level. How well do they pitch in that role? Because the rest of the arms around them, JR, it's pretty good. And if Miz, like we still have the question marks of, can he, you know, like, he was out for his fourth inning and we're like, is this going to be an implosion? Are they pushing it too far? So we're still kind of at that level. Like, is the next outing going to be the one where he suddenly can't find the zone? But if he's able to, they absolutely have the horses and, like, enough of the horses to piecemeal a bunch of these games together. And obviously, you know, it all works in unison. Freddie Peralta has to pitch well. He's probably got to eat a little bit of the innings as well. Doesn't have to get like seven innings, but five innings, things like that. There is a path forward for the Brewers against the Dodgers. Shockingly, great analysis here. They just got to pitch well. That's it.
Yeah, you have to see more from Quinn Priester, who didn't make it out of the first inning of his start. You have to see more from
I think you will.
Yeah, I think so too. You're right about the Quintana thing. Like, they're gonna need volume there. I think they're probably gonna need volume again out of Jacob Mizorowski. Maybe he's a starter. You got to flirt with that idea too. And again, like, that could be a four inning start, but still, or. I mean, sometimes I think we've lost what starting even means. I mean, you could have an opener for him. That's probably the sensible thing, but have him do what he just did in game five feels like
He was the starting pitcher for game five.
Yeah, exactly. The bulk guy, just, whatever the terminology.
They just did it. They just wanted someone else to face those top hitters one time. Let him ease into it in the second inning.
And I love it because Trevor McGill, what a vibes merchant. He trots in from the bullpen instead of coming out of the dugout so that they could play the full Metallica Four Horsemen intro, get everybody fired up. He gets all three outs. It's the only time in this series that the Cubs don't score in the first inning, and they scored multiple runs in three of the four first innings. And he comes in, he does his job, gets everybody fired up. I mean, that was as intense a first inning as you'll ever see. It was absolutely electric, as you might expect for a game five, but like, it felt like certainly felt like the ninth inning of a major playoff win. And he was feeling it. And right away they go to Mizorowski, and he's prime for the day. I mean, him and Patrick and even the two innings from Abner Uribe, he's never worked two innings for a save before. I don't think he had a really rocky start. Like, he looked a little shaky, and then comes back and absolutely dials it in. The ninth inning flew by. It felt almost anticlimactic how easy things went in the ninth inning for Abner Uribe.
The exact opposite of last year's ninth inning with the same lead. It happened so fast. It caught me. I wasn't even writing the game story, and it caught me by surprise. Like, oh, that was it. They didn't put a guy on?
Nope.
They didn't work a count? It's over? Huh. Incredible.
Clean first, clean ninth. Can't ask for much more. Well, you can. You can ask for all the innings to be clean. But this was a really, truly great performance by a bullpen with guys that you could not have convinced me 2 weeks ago were going to be the keys to anything as far as the pitching staff goes. But Mizorowski and Patrick especially really, really rose to the occasion. Chad Patrick should shrink for free in this town forever after that performance. And we'll see ultimately where it goes. He may.
He's impressed. A dude. Chad Patrick
is a dude.
Yeah.
But I assume they're going to try to get him to start where he was a,
well, yeah. Oh,
not a dude. Course. He was good at points, but like
his, I mean, the velocity that like everything's ticking up a little bit in this role. So I wouldn't expect that going forward, but he's pitching like he's a starter, just maybe giving it a little more gas from the jump. Like he's throwing all four of his pitches, this new curveball slurve, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Really adds another wrinkle for him. I mean, obviously, like throwing 91, 92 cutters instead of 88, 89, that's going to be a pretty big difference too. But this feels like it could be absolutely be a launching pad for him in the way that, well, I guess, no, never mind. Corbin Burns just was not a launching pad. He was the launching pad the next year. Nothing on that. I thought that was really good.
The launching pad. I'm very tired. But yes, Airlines 2019, not a good
Airlines.
Year
for, Quinn Priester's family like runs its own airline, basically.
Yes. Separately from balls being put into flight the way that things were against Corbin Burns in 2019. You're right. 2018 didn't end up being the launch pad for him. Figuratively, it ended up being literally that wasn't good, but love how Chad Patrick had the Burns hair. Somebody else pointed this out. Burns hair, number 39 on the back, and backdoor. Throwing, yes, like dotting the zone.
No, I mean, that was just if only he could throw his cutter 94.
I don't foresee a Cy Young in Chad Patrick's future, but whom am I to doubt? You know, I did not think he would be a key member of this, even as good as he was at AAA last year. I did not think he would be a key contributor in 2025. He was. I mean, he couldn't sustain the success. There were some warning signs. And so, like, it's a little bit of a mixed bag, but, I mean, he pitched a ton at the big league level and then contributed greatly. I mean, did he pitch in all five games or four of the five, right, Chad Patrick?
Four games, no hits. Yeah.
Wild. Absolutely wild. Four games, no hits from Chad Patrick. You cannot envision that.
Legitimately one of the best. I know it was only 4.2 innings or whatever, but it was legitimately one of the best pitching performances, I believe, in a series in Brewers playoff franchise history. So good on him. It's right up there with Eric Yardley. Shout out Eric Yardley. One more thing on the Miz thing. We have talked about it a lot. It's the story of the series, I think, for a lot of people. But I don't know if we're talking about it enough, how crazy the Brewers could have been perceived as being for doing what they did. Basically, they went into game two with Miz having one very, very shaky, very rocky relief outing. And we're basically like, we're going to trust the kid. We're going to trust the person. We're going to trust the stuff. Go out there and get 9 outs against the Cubs. Go do it. We believe in you. And then he did it. And then they basically put they hinged their entire game five plans on Miz going at least 3 innings, probably 4. Because if Miz flails in his second inning, you know, he loads the bases with no one out and you got to bring someone in. That's 9 more outs that you have to cover from somewhere. And suddenly that's maybe Jared Koenig is facing Nico Horner again. That was a terrible matchup for him in this series. Maybe Grant Anderson is pitching in leverage. Probably not what you'd want going into the series. So I think not to do like the appeal to authority thing, but I'm going to do it a little bit. The Brewers took a lot of flack. I would know. It was in my mentions for rostering Miz in the postseason and coming out and saying they were going to do it. Matt Arnold did the day before game one. A lot of flack for it. And once again, they made the right call. I don't know if they knew it was going to go great, but they put him in some kind of ridiculous leverage spots when the recent data, you know, at least the recent performances had said, don't do that. Please don't do that. It's not going to go well. And it obviously went incredibly well. So a good call. They have not always had great calls on their pitching in the playoffs, but that one was good.
You could have pushed me over with a feather in game two when he came out of the bullpen to pitch in the third inning with the Brewers and Cubs tied at three. I thought, well, there's a catastrophe. What do they think is going to happen here? They can't possibly think that this is going to go well. I thought maybe they could sneak him through an inning and just like get some confidence back or whatever, but there's no way I could have envisioned or would have envisioned three innings and no hit, no runs allowed. He ends up getting the win because the Brewers offense comes to life, scores on William Contreras' home run there in the fourth, three more runs in the fifth. But I definitely, you know, like, I just thought they were crazy. I thought they were crazy for rostering him. That did not make sense to me. There is no data you could see in the second half of the season that said roster this guy, except, and we said this, except he's got some crazy stuff, crazy velocity. Maybe he can blow a couple guys away in a big spot. But a bulk guy is the same thing as starting, you know, having somebody who can work long periods of time. So he's not going to just throw 104 miles an hour, although he kind of did in that first outing. It was mostly just 104 miles an hour, but that's not what you saw in game five. He still threw 101 miles an hour. He was still throwing plenty hard, but he threw a huge volume of off-speed pitches, threw a fair share of curves, a ton of sliders, more sliders than fastballs. And that's how he got the Cubs out. He basically took a little off the top and made it work beautifully. And again, did not walk anybody. That just wasn't something I could have foreseen either. I mean, the man was putting everybody on base. And yeah, the faith that they put in him, the just trust, maybe it was just trust in like raw stuff. Like, hey, we don't have a whole lot to lose here. We don't have a lot of other guys that could take your place who could be that special. We just have to go with what's special. Maybe that's all they did. And maybe they really had more, you know, more data, more just conversations, calculations. I'm sure they had some of that. And they were right. They were right. And it paid huge dividends.
I'm reading back through my playoff rankings, like the roster rankings by important story. See how I did. Danny Jansen, 26. Bing, bing, bing.
did not see this.
25, Brandon Lockridge. Maybe too low.
I don't know. People got way too wound up about one start there.
Lest we forget.
Well, that's he started the, one that's game. Playoffs. It wasn't a big deal. It wasn't a big deal. Yeah,
I thought it was fine. You just needed to get a bunt down.
And, agreed.
Let's see. Chet Patrick, number 13 on here. Obviously, he ended up being much higher, but I feel good about that one. I feel good about that.
I would too. I think that sounds high coming into the series, and it looks much better now. You did that, yes.
I think Joey Ortiz at 18 felt too low at the time, but it was indeed actually too high. Jared Koenig, 12. That was too high. Trevor McGill, 10. Oh, Miz was 9. May end up being too low, but at the time I felt like I was going too high with it because I was like, is this kid even going to pitch? So
if you re-rank them based on output, who is number one?
Ooh, Quinn Priester's number two on here.
Probably
a little high.
He got
I mean, I guess they overcame it, but almost blew up their whole series, so. Who's number one now? It's still Freddie Peralta.
Yeah, I think that's
it has
right.
always been. It was Freddie Peralta last year. It has always been Freddie Peralta. It will always be Freddie Peralta as long as he is on this roster and the rest of the starting pitching is like 24-year-olds. That's just how it's going to be. Freddie Peralta, you got to be the ace. Number two after Freddie, it's probably Miz. It's probably Miz now.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right. They did get, of course, some offense too. And again, we'll go through some of the other highlights of the series here. We'll do like a glorified three up, three down. We will talk about the Dodgers as well. But offensively, they got a lot of pop in this series. They got three home runs in game two, including big ones, three run homers from Andrew Vaughn to tie the game in the first, and Jackson Chourio for some big time insurance. Jackson Chourio left game one with an injury. The last time we potted, that's where we were at. Like, well, he's not really going to play in game two, is he? And man, they just let him go out there and lead off. He did not miss any action. He missed like an inning, I guess, at the end of game two. But he looked a lot better, I would say, running around in game five. He went hitless, right? So that's the first playoff game of his career where he did not get a hit. But he still did get on base, albeit briefly.
He stinks. The guy stinks.
yeah, demote that man. So he's still
he doesn't walk enough.
He literally, I don't think you could. It's like the, it's like fantasy sports where you try to trade somebody and it locks you out from trying to trade one of the big players. Like that, there isn't.
Okay,
the system won't allow it.
Okay, but legitimately, think about the prospect haul you could get.
Like, we can't do this. Even playfully, it's
okay.
It's too close to home.
Yeah, no, this is too real. This is gonna catch on. I'm joking. I am joking. Yeah. No, I'm glad you said that because I was doing a bit, and yes, like
if the.
Yeah, even if 10% of people didn't get it, I'm not getting roasted over the spit on Twitter.
If things go wrong, their next podcast we might be talking about if they're going to move on from Freddie Peralta in the offseason. So we will get to the prospect halls, real or imagined, at some point. But like Churio being able to stay in the game and be effective. Now, he wasn't moving as well. That's a huge storyline. The fact that he was able to play a credible left field. He got a lot of action out there. He got some stuff into the warning track and he tracked it all down. I don't think there was a play that didn't get made. Maybe there was a single in front of him. That was the one play that you could say Churio gets that if he's on a normal hamstring, but hit the ball very, very well, had a booming double in there somewhere. So that was, you know, that was certainly something interesting that I was paying attention to. You know, just a lot of home runs. The 2-3 run homer games, Jake Bauer, Homerson, Wrigley.
It is interesting that, like, the thing you were concerned about with the Brewers absolutely happened. What happens when it's the playoffs and suddenly you can't, in game one they did, but suddenly you can't score 5 runs by walking and stealing and dinking and dunking. It just doesn't happen that often. But
no, you,
they made up for it by hitting homers in 2 games. And, buddy, that ain't the playoffs. I don't know what is.
Well, and even look at game 3, a game they lost 4-3 at Wrigley. They hung around. I don't know how, but their pitching held it together. Quintana had a nice outing. And that kept it super close. And then Jake Bauers hits a home run. And it's 4-3. Like, it is absolutely within reach because he instantly created some offense. And in the 8th inning, Jake Bauers, who had been the offensive hero the whole day, if he comes through with the bases loaded, the Brewers win that game and there is no game 5. So you really, you know, that pop just gives you a dimension. And I mean, they have it, they've shown it. I mean, William Contreras looking real good. That's a really good sign for a guy who had kind of a lousy September after such a hot August. Bryce Turang was pretty bad in this series. He had a double leading off, and then I think he went 1-for-18 or 1-for-19 until he homered for the big insurance run in game 5, an absolute bomb to center field. I mean, home runs are where it's at. Yes, they scored 9 runs in the first inning without that, and that's great, but home runs are where it's at, and they've got to hit a bunch of them, and they did. I mean, this series is nothing without Andrew Vaughn because he answers that 3 runs in the first of game 2. Completely changes things. And then he's got the go-ahead home run, the winning home run.
So maybe the Brewers didn't get their breaks. They didn't feel like the Brewers got a lot of breaks in this series, but maybe they did not get their breaks in the series, but they certainly got their breaks throughout the year that contributed to this series. I mean, Andrew Vaughn being on the roster in the first place was 2 individual breaks. Aaron Civale wanted out, and obviously Joey Ortiz's throw took Rhys Hoskins, unfortunately, for Reese into the baseline. So I don't know, JR, kind of my reasoning when we made our predictions for the series, by the way, all 3 of us, me, you, and Todd, predicted a Brewers win. You said Brewers in 4, though, I think.
I did. I was a believer.
You dingus. Todd and I
made
5.
Made up for it by picking the Dodgers in 5.
Oh, you have cast a shadow of doubt upon the NLCS. You have seen, this is the man who came on into your earbuds and said the Brewers are winning the World Series. I've seen it. And then immediately, as soon as they face the big bad Dodgers, he hides in the closet. And
that is like, so true.
Like, it's what you're doing. I'm fine with it, but I'm going to call it out.
I saw the Dodgers in the NLCS or the NLDS, and brother, I am convinced. I'm convinced.
They do look like a fully operational Death Star, but I don't think they pounded the Phillies like people think they did. They won a cup. They turned a couple of close games on their heads, and then that game 4, they didn't hit. That game could have gone any which way, especially if a certain pitcher, you know, throws to a different base. So I don't think the Phillies are a really good team too. So maybe like it's not necessarily an insult to say you didn't crush the Phillies, but I don't think they crushed the Phillies.
We're going to talk more about the Dodgers as a matter.
Yes, yes, we will.
Let's now revisit this series on a more granular level. It's not our typical three up, three down, but we'll just go back and forth with some highlights here. We'll play the music here. Three up, three down, and then we'll do five up, five down. We'll see where the spirit takes us. Here it is. Here's our weekly segment. Three up, three down.
I'm gonna start with a big storyline that we haven't touched upon yet. It's the manager.
Is it Craig Counsell? There it is.
I'm gonna do both managers. It's both managers. Here's a question I'm gonna ask. I'm gonna ask to you. How much of we hear the loudest roar in the Brewers lineup when they announce it is for Pat Murphy? How much of that do you think is a deep appreciation of him, and how much of that do you think is residue of like, this is my new boyfriend, and my old boyfriend is right there?
Yeah,
and I'm gonna, yeah, I think there's both, but I want you to tell me what percent you think each is.
I think it's 50-50. I do. Okay. I think the cheers will still be loud for Pat Murphy going into in this Dodger series, right, but it's not the same.
And
that is absolutely the way you put it.
That is a good thing to, yeah, that'll be a good good test sample for us. We can judge it based upon that. Because, yeah, Murph still gets loud cheers every regular home game. It's up there with Yelich, you know, for most home games. So I think 50-50 is fair. I think both are true, though. I think Milwaukee really does love Murph. But they also want to make it very clear where they stand.
Yeah, I think Pat Murphy has really, I mean, when a team wins, the manager instantly becomes endearing almost automatically, but there is something extra here.
Yes,
I mean,
this is different.
I agree. They do sell pancakes because of a random interaction that he had on TV in August.
And by the way, we went down there yesterday. The chicken ones in particular, it's a good value concession food. You get the chicken, maple, it's like a maple syrup or something, little mm-hmm, bacon bits, mm-hmm. and might be some other glaze or something in there, all wrapped in a pancake. It's like a taco. Maybe a sandwich. Is a taco a sandwich?
Sure. I don't know. I never did that.
I don't think it is. And it's like $7-$8. Good deal. Good deal for
it's such a good deal.
Ballpark food, especially considering, you know, there's like a bit of a sticker. Like they could have some sticker effect to it and raise the price. Anyway, where they like Pat Murphy. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he's weird. Like he's weird. Craig Counsell is, if you want to call him, just a different way.
He is wired very different.
So differently. Yes. Pat Murphy is having
fun. To let his personality shine in any context in front of the media and probably his team either. Whereas Murph, there have been times, I think, where Murph has been like doing something deliberately. The pocket pancakes is in fact one of those. He was definitely deliberately doing something to try to, I don't know, get the attention somewhere else. But that's who this stuff he does is who he is. The introductions at the beginning of every press conference, trying to memorize every Japanese media member's name, like that. It's weird. So it's weird. Quirky, weird stuff, but that's who he is. And I think because it's authentic, people appreciate authenticity. And I think people have a pretty good like radar for that as well.
Yeah, I think that's crucial that it's authentic. It's not that he's trying to like actively take pressure off of the players, even though some of that might happen organically or maybe even intentionally to some degree. I don't think Pat Murphy is having the time of his life. I think he's just having a great time. Craig Counsell is the Billy Corgan, to use another Chicago celebrity, of major league managers. He is in pain at all times. Art makes him unhappy, but the art is pretty good. It is good. He does a great job. And the Chicago Cubs are a really good team. Really good. But, you know, at the end of the day, he's not really having a blast, or at least he's not outwardly having a blast. And Pat Murphy is just like, let's have some fun. Let's even after some losses, he's in a great mood. Not, and I don't want to mean like that he's diminishing the loss. That's not what I mean. Like he feels
no,
it.
No, it's crazy.
He absolutely feels it.
It's crazy. Yeah. He's like crushed by every single loss, but you're right. There are some losses where he's like cracking one of those ices, those sparkling ices.
Yeah.
And like doing his bit. It's weird. I'm around it a lot. It's unusual. But again, because it's authentic, I think you have to respect it.
Yeah. And I think the players do. I mean, certainly you're not going to hear somebody talk badly about the current manager, but you get the sense that he does connect with people. He does connect with players. He does say, like, you can read between the lines, get a sense of how he's feeling. You know, he doesn't reveal every detail, but, you know, he doesn't. He's not shy about sharing his emotions, his feelings, and it feels like that's working insofar as much as you can judge if something like that is working. But to go back to the original point, I think Milwaukee does love Pat Murphy. I think they love him more when Craig Counsell is standing right there. But you know what? Craig Counsell just went home sad, and now we have to revisit. Does he regret going to the Cubs? I mean, it is still way too early to make that judgment, but 2 years in, he's got one not a playoff and one loss to his old friends.
To revisit that question, that was a great question we had last mailbag episode. I think as a competitor, now that they've lost to the Brewers, maybe, I don't know. I was rereading some of his quotes from his initial press conference in Chicago, which I was there for, but I didn't remember them all. And he was talking about like, he loves that he's now in a place where like greatness is demanded when you walk in the door. And I was like, wait, do they not do that in Milwaukee? have they not been to the playoffs 3 straight years? What, 7 of the last 8, 6 of the last 7, whatever it is, so many that I've lost count. Anyway, we can move on now. I just that comment or that quote popped back up in my head, and I was I'm not sure if he meant something by it. You know, maybe he just appreciates the commitment to winning that the Chicago Cubs clearly have. But I don't know.
I mean, I'll double down on what I said. You have a better chance to win in Chicago or any major market than you do in a small market in Major League Baseball. You just do. You have more money. Theoretically, you have, you know, better, you know, people want to come there. Players, free agents want to go to the big markets. But it hasn't worked out. I mean, the Brewers just keep winning more games, more and more and more, and they just move to the NLCS, and the Cubs will probably get back to that spot. The Cubs should have money. They just don't spend it. Like, they don't use their capital to a maximum degree. It doesn't feel like it. I would say at this point, I would say if I were, you know, judging between the two franchises, which one uses their capital to as maximally as possible, I would pick the Brewers. They have figured out a system to win with the smallest market
no,
in baseball.
No doubt. You can be the biggest detractor of Brewers ownership, but I think you have to admit that which of the two teams is operating much closer to its margins, which team is turning, that's the Brewers, which team is just turning over cash left and right. Like, you, everything around Wrigley, I was like, wow, they're just like making so much money, and the Brewers are making tons of money too. But the Cubs are, I mean, the Brewers are making like 20 something million from TV revenue this year. That's nothing.
Absurd.
That's nothing. Wouldn't even pay a year for a year of Kyle Tucker.
Now the question is, will the Cubs pay for the next year of Kyle Tucker?
I don't think Kyle Tucker wants the Cubs to pay him.
I'm not sure either. No,
I don't get the sense that that's a guy who fell in love with. Maybe I'm wrong. This is also the Cubs, and like we're talking about, maybe it's a good excuse for the Ricketts to not, you know, his performance down the stretch is an excuse for them to not give him $400 million.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I think it's crazy how we might look back and see this as a disappointment. He was so good in the first half, but not in the second half, and he hurt. So that had a little to do with it. But ultimately, he struck out in a huge spot in Game 5. He was not he homered in Game 4, but he's not a difference maker in this series, and that's tough, considering, you know, he was, I think, unquestionably the best new player in the division, and he was good at times. Obviously, he had a great first half, borderline MVP stuff in the first half, just after that. All right, my thing that I wanted to point out, my number one, I guess, if we're still on one, is the phone celebration, the hang up the phone. You had Wade Contreras William Contreras bust that out in game two when he hit the home run, the go-ahead home run to put them up 4-3 early. He answered the phone, an imaginary phone, and then hung it up. This came back a couple times. He was asked about it after the game. He said he was talking to Brewers fans. Not sure I get it exactly, but I think he just had, that was just the answer he had in his head. And then Abner Uribe called back to that after getting the final outs of game five, the phone celebration. They took a team photo with everybody holding imaginary phones. So it's now a thing. It is a thing. I don't know if that was born out of pre-planning in any way, shape, or form. I don't know if it was a reference to something. I don't know if it was just like an on-the-spot random thing for William Contreras to do. William Contreras has a lot of fun out there. I get the sense that could have been just random. I don't know, but we have a new thing. We'll see if there's more. If there are more home runs in the NLCS, I assume there'll be some. We will see if that returns in any way, shape, or form.
We also need to see if they give us a different answer as to what it is. That's gonna have to come from them,
line, guys.
That's gonna have to come from them. Yeah, Brewer fans said William Contreras. By the way, that quote ended up being incredible. He did that the entire post game after game two in Spanish, and then there was the last question of it was who are you calling, and he does it in English.
Yeah.
So he was clearly sending a message. There's been a lot from William Contreras. Like, I talked to him after game five. I didn't even get to use a lot of it in my story, but the man's just like he just breathes fire, and that came out in the Players Tribune article. Obviously, I'm not sure how much it's his sentiment, even if he's not writing, it's his sentiment.
Yeah. You know what? I'm glad you brought that up just real quickly. Like, the more I read Players Tribune articles, the more I realize they have the same style. Like, the same people are working on these stories making them into something.
These players are all the best. They're all the best writers on earth. Because they're all like
they really understand well dramatic these pauses guys, to just a beautiful these degree.
Guys, these guys are essay savants. Honestly, they could take my job. I should be worried.
They're very good writers.
They could understand baseball and probably write about it. So you know what? They probably could take my job. I shouldn't have said that. Please don't do that. Jed
all I'm saying is Players Tribune ghostwriters, you guys are good. You have game. I'm acknowledging you. I see you. You don't want me to see you, but I do. You're good. You're really good. Keep going.
This is something that I'll pick it up with something that could matter later on and will come up in this series. The Joy Ortiz pinch hit spots. They did not pinch hit for him until not early. They did it late, I think, in game three. I remember who exactly it was. Perkins, maybe.
It was.
A bit of a peculiar, start that game. It's a bit of a peculiar spot for him to come in there too, anyway, but they had the chance to hit for him in game four when it was a 3-run game. And I believe the fifth inning, Boyd was on the ropes and they bunted with him. Pat Murphy explained it as like they liked the matchup with Ortiz against Boyd because he had good at bats. But then you liked the matchup and you bunted. It didn't make a whole ton of sense to me. That was the other thing about managers, too. I didn't get to this. Retroactive 3-up, 3-down. Pat Murphy managed the heck out of that series. This is two straight series now. His only two as the Brewers manager so far where it's like, I can nitpick a thing or two here, but he did a really good job. I think he handled it really well. They had two bullpen games and there's nothing in either of those games, I think, to point at. Taking Aaron Ashby out, your best reliever this year, not named Abner Uribe, for Chad Patrick? that's stones. I don't know if you have anything else to add to that.
No, I do agree with you. I know there was some consternation about that lineup in game three. But
sure. But Bauer,
I just didn't see the lineup deal there.
The lineup where Jake Bauer's homered and drove in a single. Anyway. The consternation, the move to me was that bunt with Ortiz and not lifting him there. I don't know if you go to Collins or Monasterio there, someone who's a better hitter than Ortiz. And then the other tricky spot that came up was the fourth inning of game five. They're down. They're up by one, 2-1. Vaughn had just homered. They put the bases loaded, two outs. And they brought in a right-hander, Palencia. You could have gone to Bowers there. I actually lean keep Ortiz in because you could I think you can lose the game there by a defensive miscue giving them runs, and it's a little more difficult to win the game there. But this is why the job is so tough. I would have seriously considered hitting Bowers, even though I probably would have just fallen back into the default thing of sending Ortiz up there and letting him play defense. And then, of course, he does make the final out of the series.
Yeah. Yes, on a slow grounder, which was pretty routine, but still, I imagine that's not an easy thing for somebody to pick up and do. And he did it very easily. Yeah, but you're right. The one play I think is a mistake is the you're talking about Ortiz. He comes up with two on, nobody out. You're down three runs, and you bunt with Ortiz because presumably you don't feel comfortable with him hitting in that spot, and you just want to get a run when you're down three runs. That didn't really make sense to me. And then Ortiz doesn't hit into a lot of double plays, so I don't think they were worried about that. He really just pops up, quite honestly, most of the time, and I feel like pull him. If you don't feel like he can keep the carousel turning, then pull him. He's not your guy. You're down three. Go get it. But other than that, I mean, it helps when your bullpen guys are all dealing. You look great. Every bullpen maneuver looks great, but you're right about Ashby. Game five, he's brought into the big spot. They let him face the three batters, and then they were done with it. You know, like, you don't have it today. You got the out with Tucker, and that's good, but we don't want you to face Suzuki. I think that's smart. I think that worked out great. We were on something else, were we not?
We intertwined two, three up, three downs. I did Ortiz.
You flashback. Yes. That's right. The speaking of celebrations, the Brewers had an L flag made for them, or they borrowed it from the fans. I'm not actually sure. And
Jake Bowers requested it from a fan.
Love that. Took some pictures with it. Arguably petty, if you want to, you know, like if you are looking for just like keeping the karma fresh. On the other hand, they just beat the Cubs in the playoffs. Let's go. That's what happens. Little William Contreras shout out with the Cubs lose on Instagram as well. You know, one of the stories that got a ton of feedback, or not feedback, but new traffic, was from 2018, a story that I wrote about this giant L flag. I'm sure you remember it, coming into American Family Field. Some guy smuggled just a massive L flag and unfurled it after, I think it was a walk-off winner. And it just, like, from the one of the upper decks just came streaming down. And this guy was like from like Jefferson or something, and had been, you know, had smuggled this giant flag in. Very funny, very cool story. I really thought it would have been amazing if we saw a recurrence of that. We did see some L flags, but they were mostly small. They were normal flag size. This was something completely different. So he had it custom made. I remember it was like an overseas delivery type thing. I am bummed that we didn't see anything like that. The Brewers themselves tried to recreate it with a little AI touch and a giant L flag over the bean in Chicago, whatever. But I do love an L flag. It is a good aesthetic. I enjoy it as an aesthetic. I'm happy that it had a presence here at American Family Field, no matter how big or small.
I was way too far into my life before I realized that the L flag is not just like a thing that, you know, opponents of the Cubs mock them for having the W flag. And it's a real thing.
It is.
I can't believe they still do that. I assume
it's a holdover. I'm guessing that before the internet, people didn't know, so they would drive by the stadium or walk by the stadium or horse and carriage.
I actually really respect it that they do it.
Yeah.
It's like when they first created this, how did they not have the foresight to know about internet trolling? But I think it's probably, with Cubs fans at this point, it's probably this, like, at the point where, well... Okay, the best thing I can come up with in my head on the spot to relate it to is every opponent of Wisconsin playing jump around when they beat them. In the past, they don't do that anymore because it's like it doesn't carry any significance to beat Wisconsin. Like, you stroll up with a group of JV football players and beat Wisconsin. You show up with me calling your plays. I'm your offensive coordinator, and you beat Wisconsin. You roll out of bed, put your cleats on, and go beat Wisconsin. You could your whole team, your pregame meal could just be endless happy meals. You'd go beat Wisconsin. Doesn't matter where you're playing. Okay. That's the closest analogy I have to it, JR. No one does it anymore, though. No one plays jump around in their locker room after beating Wisconsin because, like, you don't kick the dog when it's down. You just go, oh, that's a poor dog. And maybe you call someone and you walk away. Unfortunately, no one has called Chris McIntosh yet, although he might be intertwined in this as well. The chancellor, no one's called the chancellor yet. No one's called me. I know the buyout's a lot of money. I got 10 bucks. I got 10 bucks. I will become a booster.
You good? Anything else?
I haven't watched a snap in 2 weeks. That's
I wonder, nor have I. I wonder if people still stick around for the jump around in the third quarter. I'm guessing they do, but I don't know. Did people stick around at Iowa?
It might be getting to the point where students got mocked for years for showing up late and leaving early. Now they might be showing up or jump around and then sticking to the end.
They should start sending out screenshots of the regular stadium and then there should be a whole student organization complaining about fans not showing up and leaving early, because let me tell you, that has caught on. That has become a much trendier than it used to be. This was not like Philadelphia sports weekend. The Packers won. They beat Cincinnati. The Bucks are winning all their exhibition games. That's nice. The Brewers moved on. It's not like Philadelphia, where the Eagles lost to the Giants the same night the Phillies got eliminated from the NLDS in spectacular fashion.
And
the Philadelphia Flyers lost their season opener in the NHL.
That's where you were going. I was going somewhere else. Penn State.
Tell me. Penn State. Now, is Penn State a Philadelphia thing, though? It's not really.
It is not. It is not. However, I guarantee you, I mean, they got to be the biggest school in Pennsylvania. Just for like fans' perspective, I would venture to guess the biggest college football team in Philadelphia. Correct. I would love to actually find this answer out. If you're listening to this and you're from Philly and you're listening to a Brewers podcast for some godforsaken reason, seek help. But strange. Also, weird. First, give me help. Who is the college football team? I mean, other than Temple.
Yeah, or like I think Villanova might have football, but like not really.
Well, they do. Yeah, they do. They do.
I guess it would be Penn State. I mean, unless it's just from another state, but
Rutgers? Are we Rutgers supporters in this house?
No, come on. Dude, no one. Piscataway is the only city in America that roots for Rutgers. Yeah, it's probably Penn State. So real tough, real tough week for Pennsylvanians in general. There is a bunch of Pennsylvanians out there who root for the Flyers and the Phillies and Penn State and the Eagles, and this is just not their week. But in Milwaukee and Wisconsin, we're feeling all right. We're feeling good. Giannis is still here, so everything's happening mostly all right. Wisconsin Badger football team, not something we think about. That's just, you know,
just an old story.
Is it my turn?
No, I think that was your turn and I kidnapped it.
Oh, I don't even remember what I was talking about, but you go ahead then. You got a new one.
I do. Jake Bowers is good. Jake Bowers is going to be back.
Is he? He's expensive.
Yes. No, he's not.
Well, no, he's not expensive relative to what he's worth. He's expensive by the Brewer standards that didn't even want to bring him back this year because they non-tendered him, if everyone remembers.
There's a big difference. I mean, his numbers are way better this year. B, he's finishing the year incredible and not striking out as much. And clearly they've been intrigued with him the whole time. So bringing him back a third time would not be a surprise at all. Plus, him and Vaughn seem to make a pretty dang good... Like, you can do a lot worse than those two at first base for a combined 10 million. So I think they bring him back. Plus, he's a good clubhouse guy. Good defensively. These things matter. So Jake Bowers will be back, and quietly, I guess, in this grand scheme of the series, had an incredible game in game three and then barely played outside of that. Pinch hit in game one. I don't know if he pinch hit even in game four. He obviously had a big strikeout in game three, came up in a tough spot, and kind of got, feel like Brad Keller kind of sneak attacked him with first and second and two outs, I believe, or was it second and third and two outs? Either way, big spot, struck out. But nevertheless, that could be something to keep an eye on in this series. Not only him playing more against Glasnow, Yamamoto, although Yamamoto, I don't know off the top of my head, but the split makes me think maybe he's a reverse splits guy. Who else? Oh, yeah, Shohei Ohtani's on the staff. Forgot about him.
You heard of
and
him.
Then who is their fourth starter?
Did you say Glasnow? Snell?
Oh, it's Blake Snell. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Blake Snell, by the way, great comment today in the post game or the off day media availability. I was sitting there and he came in, he was sitting down. It was like 10 seconds and no one had raised their hand for a question. So I was like, okay, let's make something about the Brewers offense on the fly. And I sputtered over my words for about 10 seconds. And then he answered about how the Brewers offense is a challenge and they put the ball in play. And then he says, the average Joe stuff, I'm not buying it. They're a good offense. They have the best record in baseball. They're a good team. And I was like, oh, yes, here we go. The underdog Olympics. Who's going to be the bigger underdog in this series? Actually, we all know it's the Brewers, and I think the Dodgers would tell you everyone's going to pick them too. But at least Blake Snell's not buying this, whatever Pat Murphy is selling about the Brewers being major underdogs in this series.
Yeah, their starting pitching is ridiculous. It's so good. And we could talk a little more about the Dodgers when we're just about wrapped here, but gosh, it's so good. And yes, they went 6-0 against this Dodgers team this year, the Brewers did, but they did not face a fully realized Shohei Ohtani. He wasn't pitching yet. Blake Snell did not face the Brewers. The two-time Cy Young award-winning Blake Snell, who might legitimately be the fourth best pitcher on the starting rotation, did not face them this year. So this is going to be real tough. A couple more things though that I want to visit quickly. First, you mentioned, I mean, Andrew Vaughn hadn't homered since August 15th, and he'd been hitting the ball really well. It kind of been interesting, I thought, how he's really worked counts very well. He has made really crisp contact a lot, but he hadn't hit a home run since August 15th until he hits the 3-run homer in game 2. And then the first 3-run homer in Brewers history, which blows my mind. Brewers playoff history, that is. And they did not have a grand slam either. And then they hit a second 3-run homer later in that game, of course, off the bat of Jackson Chourio. Vaughn's homer in game 5 then. So like I rediscovered his power. Feels wrong because I do feel like he was hitting the ball hard and zipping it quite a bit. But he does get the balls over the fence. Tremendous story, as somebody said on social media. He has successfully broken the hearts of both Chicago fan bases now in the course of his recent history, having flamed out as a Chicago White Sox prospect and rediscovering everything in Milwaukee. Pretty wild stuff. What else? I could just rattle off a couple more things if you want before we get to Dodgers.
I would not hate that.
Okay. Quinn Priester, they're going to need more from him. He had a really bad singular outing. Brewers played a little bit of that trickery. You know, speaking of Dodgers, Brewers, NLCS, I think a lot of people remember the switcheroo in game 4 of that series where Wade Miley was named as the starter. He faced one batter, and then they turned to Brandon Woodruff, the idea being, of course, to get the Dodgers to commit to putting some right-handers in the lineup that they might not otherwise. Shortly after this, the 3-batter minimum was introduced. I don't know if it was a direct correlation or result causation, but it was a piece of evidence in that mix. So you can't quite get away with that, but it looked really likely that Quinn Priester was going to pitch game 2, that they would have an opener with Ashby and then go right to Priester. And Priester even warmed up. He went out to the bullpen, but he was never going to pitch. So a little bit of a trickery. He ends up being the guy they go right to at the start of game 3. And maybe they should have gone with an opener for that game as well. He did not look good. Got hit around, gave up runs, left after recording just 2 outs. They're going to need more from him because this is a 7-game series. You're going to need starting pitchers to actually go deep into games. They're going to need Quinn Priester to show up and probably Jose Quintana to some degree as well. He of course looked good in his one outing in this series. The Freddy Peralta decision to pitch him in game 4 instead of game 5. I think it was probably the right call, but it had to be tough. He does better with more, like a lot of starting pitchers, does more with extra rest. This was his normal rest. It wasn't like he was pitching on short rest or anything, but putting him there in Wrigley Field, he pitches much better at home. I feel like those splits probably are kind of legit with Freddie. You know, I still, with Miz being probably unavailable for that game because of how much he had pitched a couple days earlier, and Jose Quintana was available.
At least preferably like lesser available.
Yes. I think it just, I just think Freddie was the right call. It just, you know, in the moment, it sure looked like it had burned them. They had used their best starter in a game that they did not come close to winning. And then they're stuck in it with a bullpen game in game five. Now it worked out beautifully, but man, for those couple days, things did not feel good in Brewer land. The vibes were not good, having lost two straight games after taking a 2-0 lead in this series. And you didn't have your starting pitcher, but they'll have him back for game two. He'll be available early on in this series. We'll see him again almost certainly on Tuesday back at American Family Field. I think that's it. Other than changes to the NLCS roster, what, if any, do you think, and this dovetails right into facing the Los Angeles Dodgers. You wrote about this at jsonline.com. Didn't see a lot of changes, but a couple things. So what do you see? What do you think makes most sense here when they turn in their roster card on Monday afternoon?
Not what is not included in the story, which will be moot by 11 a.m. on Monday by the time a lot of you are listening to this. I have no idea. Todd and I have had some general principles that we both agreed upon. Like this is the direction they're going. They're going to go 12 pitchers, 14 position players again. They're going to prefer a little more length in this series, 7 games, as opposed to the 5 games with, you know, they have the same amount of off days in the 5-game series as they do for the 7. Plus they had a week off going into it. So a bit more need for length there. Maybe that means Tobias Myers or DL Hall or somebody. And also, like, Rob Zastrzyzny would have been on the NLDS roster if it was the Padres because of that lefty pocket at the bottom with O'Hearn. I think I do this every podcast. Like, why do I keep bringing up this lefty pocket? And I don't remember who the hitters are. Anyway, they exist. The Dodgers, I can tell you who the Dodgers pocket is at the top. It's Shohei Ohtani and Frederick Freeman. Mookie Betts mixed in between. Maybe that being so crucial to their lineup makes the Brewers want to add another lefty. But then again, the Cubs had Bush and Tucker, and I thought that was a pretty important pocket. And they did not roster Zastrzyzny, even though there probably would have been more use for him as it played out than Anderson. But so, like, that's where I see maybe Tobias Myers and maybe Rob Z, and maybe not even Rob Z, maybe DL Hall, or maybe they keep Gasser on one of those lefties. That's where I see those guys being on the roster. I think Logan Henderson is an intriguing option. He's been pitching his way back in Arizona and is fully ready to go. Just hasn't, you know, faced big league hitters, much less the Dodgers. I think he's an intriguing option for a couple reasons. Like, the low slot fastball could give a hitter like Ohtani some problems. Probably not a hitter like Freddie, but he also has the changeup. So, like, he has weapons for both sides. But ultimately, I think Tobias Myers with the split change has weapons for both sides as well. And has just pitched in the big leagues more recently and pitched well in relief in the big leagues. So that's where we have the changes. I could be very wrong. We could be very wrong. There's like 5 guys, I think: DL Hall, Myers, Anderson, Zastrzyzny, Gasser, Henderson. 6 guys, and there's 2 spots for them. So,
right.
We'll see.
Henderson makes sense because they could really use a starter, you know, somebody who can eat up a lot of innings in the start, possibly even 5 or 6 if everything's going well. I don't think Henderson would be that guy.
You're not going to let him pitch 5 innings,
right?
Frankly,
just the lack of recent. I mean, I guess some of that comes back to Gasser, who had 1 outing and it was really quite bad. He gave up 2 homers and was like, gave up a third for a second before they reviewed it, but like really close to giving up a third. Loud contact, didn't look good in that outing against the Cubs. They could reassess and decide that it's a much better matchup against the Dodgers. I don't know, but if you can't rely on him, that's obviously one of the vulnerable spots. Like you said, it feels like you could go with a starter type there. You know, in a 7-game series, feel like if you can get 5 innings out of a guy, that's gonna be valuable. You know, you're gonna want to do that. I don't know if they have that guy though. I don't know if I think Logan Henderson could even realistically go 5 innings, trustworthy enough to go 5 innings, given that he just has not pitched in the big leagues in so long at this point. I don't think Robert Gasser is that guy either. Tobias Myers isn't that guy, so they just don't have that. So then it's in the absence of that, it's about tweaking what you have. And then it's like you said, Zastrzyzny is a really good candidate for that. and we'll see if Myers ends up getting the call for Grant Anderson. I think that's a possibility. So, okay. So more about the Dodgers. I mean, you'd mentioned Blake Snell's not falling for the underdog thing, but like, come on, they're super underdogs, right? Like, I don't care how many wins they have. They don't have four bona fide, amazing starting pitchers in that rotation. And I am not talking about Clayton Kershaw, who may not even make that roster. They have four absolute rockets in that starting rotation. The Brewers
the Brewers are the underdogs in so many facets here. Obviously, they have a home field and they beat the Dodgers six times and lost none this season. But come on now, like everyone in the national media, if they're under truth serum, would tell you the Dodgers are going to win this thing. And reasonably so. The Dodgers have we just saw them win the World Series, and now they're playing great with all these all-stars. Payroll is three times what the Brewers is. Of course, the Brewers are the underdogs. Although I do think, though, JR, that the implied odds, like Fangraphs odds as well, I think Fangraphs has it at like 70% Dodgers win. The implied odds from Vegas are about 67-ish, so two-thirds chance Dodgers win. That feels a little high to me. Does feel a little high to me. I think even if you're a big Dodgers proponent, we can forget that this is baseball, and a 97 win team is a very good team.
I agree with that. And a team that, you know, yes, they didn't face those pitchers. Like I mentioned earlier, when they went 6-0 against the Dodgers, they faced Shohei Ohtani. They faced, not as a pitcher, but as a hitter, they faced Freddie Freeman, Mookie Betts. He was in those games. And the Brewers just beat them, and there were some tense games. There were some really great moments. Jacob Izrowski had an unforgettable mano-a-mano with Clayton Kershaw, and they won that game. But, like, they got it done. And, you know, Ohtani, he kind of struggled in the playoffs at the plate, hasn't he? Like, he had a bunch of strikeouts. I don't have those numbers in front of me.
The Phillies matched up pretty good with him, with Suarez and Sanchez, and then they
came
to the lefties. But that... maybe that's something there. If like your A1 on this team has to be limit Ohtani, and that's that. Like, obviously he can crush lefties. There's no question in the world that he can hit lefties, but there's zero question that he hits righties even better. So,
perhaps 18.
The Brewers strategy. Yeah, they're going to need some big series out of Ashby and Koenig.
Right, or Zastrzyzny, or whomever is pitching from the left side. Yeah, Ohtani, 1 of 18, 2 walks, 1 single, in the Philly series. Now the Brewers surely
he won't heat up.
The Brewers do not have Christopher Sanchez or Ranger Suarez or Matt Strom or
The best baseball player I've ever seen will keep playing at that rate.
I love the final four of this layout. You've got Seattle. They've never been to a World Series. Toronto hasn't been to the World Series since the early 90s. The Brewers haven't been to a World Series since 1982. The Dodgers won last year. They won it last year.
You know the dragon meme where it's like the fierce dragon.
Four dragons, yes.
The silly face. It's the exact opposite. Three of them making a silly face. And then the one fire-breathing dragon. That's the Dodgers. They're very good. But they're also beatable. But they're very good.
You picked them to win in the Journal Sentinel, our staff predictions. But between you, me, and our listeners, our loyal listeners, do you believe it? Do you really believe it?
I think there's enough of me that believes it. And here's the thing. Okay, I don't believe it. Like in my core true serum, I'd pick the Dodgers. But true serum, I understand how baseball operates. And I understand that I have been covering this team. You've been covering this team. Everyone listening has been watching this team for 6.5 months now. And they just keep doing stupid things that they should not be doing. And I'm just at a point where I just throw my hands up and I go, yeah, you know, maybe you're going to win 14 games in a row and Andrew Monastery is going to hit up go ahead homer to get you that 14 straight win. Maybe that's what happens. So 97 wins, best record in baseball. Get a couple of bounces. I think they have the pitching. They have more than enough pitching to line up and kind of spiral the Dodgers lineup into some chaos. We'll see. Nothing in this series would surprise me short of like Brewers in five. I don't think that's going to happen, but they've got their backs up against it. And that's kind of like where the Brewers like to be. So I'll just I'll throw a chaos pick out there and go Brewers in seven.
Oh man, it's not possible. I pick the Dodgers in five, and I mean it. But like, also, the idea of even being close to seeing this team going back to its first World Series since 1982 is just so tantalizing. I think game one Monday might change my mind. Now, of course, if the Brewers win game one, everyone's going to be like, they're going to win the series. I am old enough to remember 2018 and 2011, where they won game one. In both of those seven game series, they did not advance to the World Series. It's not going to mean that much, other than that's a game the Dodgers should win. Theoretically, the Brewers had to play 2 days later than the Dodgers did. So they had to burn up, you know, these relievers. They only get 1 day of rest. Now they get to stay at home, so that's helpful, but they only get 1 day of rest in between, whereas the Dodgers are just like ready to roll. There's, you know, like they've had their rest. They have guys lined up and they have crushed in this postseason. But if the Brewers sneak away with game one, that should be the Dodgers game. It should be their game. Now it's Freddie in game two. And I feel like Freddie could actually do some pretty good stuff against this Dodgers team. And I certainly think they can win at least one game out in Dodger Stadium. I've seen them do it plenty of times, including in 2018 when they were last in this position in the NLCS.
And true. Yeah.
Another game that went 13 innings that, you know, probably they could have stolen with just a clutch hit here or there. So I this team won't be afraid of the Dodgers. Of course they won't. So I just believe a little too much in the Dodgers talent. The raw talent just seems so good, but, You could definitely start to turn me if the Brewers sneak away with game one on Monday. You could definitely start to chisel away at my belief where I think this series is going.
Well, I do think Freddie Peralta matches up better against the Dodgers than he does against the Cubs.
100%. 100%.
I do believe that.
And Quinn Priester too. I mean, I don't know if Quinn Priester matches up, but I don't know.
Yes and no. Yeah.
I think good teams can hit sinker slider, you know? So like, it's not, I don't know. I just felt like they were shielding him from the Cubs. They were trying to wait as long as they could to use him. And then they used him and it was real bad, real, real bad. So I don't know.
Yeah. I think the Brewers knew what might be happening in that game. You can't convince me otherwise.
Yeah.
We need some truth serum. I got a truth serum. Some people, did you know Quinn Priester was a bad one? Do you feel like the bad things were going to happen? They would probably say yes.
I think they're going to need a clutch hit that they did not get in the Cubs series. I mean, they got the home runs, which were great. And certainly the Andrew Vaughn hit was massive, but there were a couple spots where they really needed to add on and it didn't happen. Now the long ball saved them a couple times and obviously they won the series. So they got the hits, but like they, you know, a little that offense dried up a little bit against quality pitching. It's going to have to come through. They're going to have to piece some stuff together, just like they did in game one against the Cubs. That has to happen again to stay in the series and to beat the Dodgers.
Well, maybe there's some, I mean, they didn't hit with runners in scoring position. So maybe JR, I don't know. This is baseball analysis. Maybe there's regression in their future and toward the mean in a positive way. Or yeah. Maybe they get swept. Thanks for listening. Great analysis.
Eat Arby's. Joey Ortiz will get a base hit with the bases loaded.
The Dodgers struggle against cutters.
Really?
I'm
interested. Intrigued.
Also, not great against sinkers. Not great against sinkers. So
okay. Well, Quinn Priester. Start Chad Patrick in a game.
It's funny that I said that about Freddie Peralta. I changed my mind. They change up fastball, change up four seam. No. It is the Dodgers. They're going to hit something.
They will hit something.
Freddie's just going to have to be really good.
Shohei Ohtani's going to homer.
Against Freddie?
No, just a lot in general. And then at some point, the Brewers will have their backs against the wall because that is just going to happen.
What odds would you give me on Shohei Ohtani hitting a homer in the first at-bat of the series? Like another leadoff home run to kick off the series?
I would give odds 6-1, 6-1, or maybe 5-1, 5-1.
Oh, I will take the no on that then.
You think it's much more likely than that?
Much less likely.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But I think very likely. I think it's relatively very plausible. This begins the exact same way. I don't know.
We will find out. Monday night, American Family Field. We'll be there. And then Tuesday night at American Family Field. The Brewers are guaranteed two more games here at home. And if they can, if they can win one, they have to win both to be guaranteed another one, right? The math up to seven is hard. But they do the 2-3-2 format, of course, at this point. So you don't, it's not like the NBA where you get the two home games and the two road games and you come back home for one. No, you gotta win out there. You're gonna have to win out there. Or the season's over. If you lose one of those at home, you've got to win in LA. So we'll see how that goes. Kurt, I think that's it. I think we've done it. Do you have anything else that you want to share?
No, I have nothing to share. I gotta go see if my bathroom is still okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Make sure no more walls have crashed down. Hopefully no more walls crash down while I'm in LA this week from Wednesday to Sunday.
Oh, man, yes. It had to be LA. It had to be LA.
You were hoping for Philly?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Philly is quite a bit nicer, yes.
They have directs from here. I just like Philly better. It's closer.
Same.
Give me Philly.
Yes.
All day, every day over SoCal. Well, no, maybe not all SoCal, but definitely LA.
I want to go to Seattle or Toronto so badly, Kurt. I've never been to either place, and I am dying to go. I need to go.
Well, same here. Good thing you got your passport.
Thanks. Thank goodness I got that passport.
I still can't. Toronto lost game one. You're fine.
I know. Also gave up a leadoff home run and still lost game one. The Brewers can relate to this. The Seattle Mariners yielding a leadoff homer, but then came back and won the game, didn't allow another run. The Brewers blueprint to success is discovered by Seattle. We will see. Of course, they'll be playing tomorrow as well. The Brewers are the later game. So that series will already have two games under its belt before Milwaukee throws its first pitch. We don't know the starter yet. We'll find out. We'll find out soon enough. Oh, you're holding up your passport. That's adorable. I bet yours didn't cost as much as mine did.
No, it's probably the exact same amount, actually, because we're renewing an old passport.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was
doing. Yeah, it costs the same amount, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, still didn't want to pay it, but there's a chance Toronto-Milwaukee still comes to pass, and it will have been worth it. All right, that's going to do it. We will try to do this again. It depends on bathrooms collapsing and timelines and, like, you know, we'll try. We're going to try. I want to do this. But, you know, we have lives and stuff, and it's hard. So we will try to come at you at some point throughout this series. Enjoy the baseball. We'll be back, of course, if not sooner, then again next week. Bye, everybody.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.